5 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Whenever I listen to that particular recording, I am instantly transported back to one of the most amazing moments in a life lived with music, the moment when I heard Chanticleer for the first time in a performance actually at Beloit College several decades ago. And I remember being transported by their performance of Franz Biebel's Ave Maria, a piece that most of us in that audience had never heard before or even heard of before. I remember racing to the table out in the lobby afterwards, desperate to buy a compact disc that would have that piece, only to be told apologetically that no recording as yet had been made. And this was years before iTunes, years before Amazon, years before streaming, and I still can feel that kind of tightness in my chest, this desperate sense of wanting so badly to hear Franz Biebel's Ave Maria again, sung by Chanticleer. Of course, eventually on a Christmas album called Our Heart's Joy, that transcendently beautiful piece and performance was shared with the world, along with all kinds of other musical treasures for the Christmas season. And that's just one of a wide array of amazing recordings that have been offered up by Chanticleer over its long history, a history which began back in 1978. And Chanticleer, of course, not only is in the business of making amazing recordings, but of also delivering amazing live performance. And the folks of southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois are fortunate indeed to have the opportunity to experience the magic of Chanticleer this Friday evening in Siebert Chapel on the campus of Carthage College. I'm very privileged to be speaking for the next few minutes with Tim Keeler, who is music director of Chanticleer. And we will be finding out from him about his history with the group, about his own musical life, even outside of Chanticleer, and about some of the wonderful music that they are planning to offer up at Friday night's concert. Tim Keeler, we welcome you to the Morning Show.
Thanks for having me, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here.
I feel very privileged to be speaking with you, and look forward so much to Friday night's concert. I'm curious to know, first of all, your own initial encounter with the group Chanticleer, for which now you serve as music director, and briefly for a time you were one of its singers as well. But I suspect you knew something of Chanticleer well before all that. Tell us about your initial encounter with this group.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I've been singing for pretty much as long as I can remember, and Chanticleer has been a part of that experience for a long time as well. I very clearly remember the first time I heard a recording of the group. It was Magnificat, a 12-part Magnificat by Andrea Gabrielli, and it displayed the entire range of what Chanticleer is capable of. It had these amazing resonant low notes and these astounding high notes all put together in this amazing package of vibrant Renaissance polyphony that it was totally new to me as a high school student. It floored me, and it became something I was a bit obsessed with, actually, for a while. And it really was started me down this path of choral music, of singing, and of conducting. And I'll never forget listening to that track for the first time. And since then, of course, I've seen Chanticleer perform live, and as you said, was fortunate enough to actually sing with the ensemble in the 2017-2018 season. I had been working as a freelance singer in New York City as a countertenor, and I got a call up over the summer and said, "Hey, would you like to move to San Francisco and sing at Chanticleer?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely. That sounds amazing." And so that was a fantastic year of singing with the group and experiencing what they do firsthand. And now I'm back as music director, which is a bit of a pinch me moment.
I should think. I know from your biography and your extensive resume that you indeed have done all kinds of singing, including a lot of experience singing with a couple of very important groups in New York, one of them specializing in early music, the other probably best known for doing very contemporary avant-garde repertoire. I'm curious what it's like to be a part of several different superb groups, and I'm pretty sure that there's been at least a little bit of overlap, that you haven't been with solely one group at a time, but correct me if I'm wrong. But what is that like to kind of move between different renowned ensembles that I suspect each share a legacy of excellence, but otherwise probably in a lot of different ways are each a unique ensemble?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, I tell you that. As a singer in New York, any freelance musician will tell you that you make your career doing a bunch of different things. It really helps to have the desire and the skill set to dabble in a lot of different genres. As you were saying, I did a lot of early music when I was in New York, particularly with a group called Tenet. I did a lot of new music with this group called Ekmalis, a lot of avant-garde stuff, and everything in between, really. You sort of make what you can out of it, which was, I feel like it's really served me well now in this role as music director of Chanticleer, having sort of breadth of knowledge of different repertoire across the sort of gamut. One thing that's pretty unique about Chanticleer for every singer involved and myself as music director is that it is a full-time singing job, and that's pretty rare. In fact, it's only one of two ensembles in America that you can work at as a performer, as a professional choral singer, and have that be your sole source of income. It's pretty remarkable. So that being said, Chanticleer is pretty much everything that we all do here. It's the 12 singers and me, and it's our life. And fortunately, Chanticleer dabbles in pretty much every style of music, whether it's Renaissance or even medieval chant, all the way to new commissions. We try to commission new composers every year. We also do jazz and pop, and try to stick our feet in everything we can. So Chanticleer becomes this perfect blend of I like to think everybody's past experiences into this amazing whole.
We're speaking with Tim Keeler, music director of the group Chanticleer, one of the most renowned a cappella vocal groups in the world. They are coming to perform this Friday evening, a concert at Carthage College in beautiful Siebert Chapel. Tim Keeler, I think I mentioned in passing the year 1978, the year that the group Chanticleer was formed. That's well before your time with Chanticleer. For all I know, maybe it was before you were born. But I'm curious what you can tell our listeners and me about the very earliest days of Chanticleer and the circumstances under which this group was first organized.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's a story that I think resonates with a lot of musicians. So 1978 in San Francisco, there was a group of singers who were in the choir at Grace Cathedral here in the city, and one of them being Louis Botto, who is also a student in musicology in the area. And he and a couple of his singer friends decided to get together and sing some music one night over dinner around a kitchen table here in the city. And it was really sort of brought out of this theory, this idea of singing Renaissance music, of singing early music, with a group entirely composed of countertenors, tenors, and basses. So that's, you know, without sopranos and altos, and without like boy trebles, as would happen in a lot of cathedral choirs. So this is all countertenors, tenors, and basses singing this Renaissance polyphony, which at the time was, you know, pretty novel and pretty exciting. It hadn't really been done. You know, there's the only other group that was sort of experimenting with this kind of singing was a group that you're probably familiar with called the King Singers. And they started, I think it was about maybe 8 or 9 years before. And so they'd been doing this thing, and Chanticleer sort of jumped on and did the American version of it in a really special and unique way in this really special and unique city. And so that was 1978, and started really by this man called Louis Botto, who then forged the path of Chanticleer as this full-time professional choral group. And it's, you know, taken a lot of different forms over the years. It wasn't always 12 singers. At the current version right now, it's 12 singers, 6 countertenors, 3 tenors, and 3 basses. And it's been some various arrangements of that over the years. And as I said, we started as an early music group, but we've since gone on to sing pretty much everything. And that has a lot to do with the music director who followed Louis Botto, this man named Joseph Jennings, who really was instrumental in bringing Chanticleer into everybody's hearts and minds throughout America. And he introduced a lot of new repertoire to our catalog and did a lot of arrangements for us. And he's just a fantastic musician, and the organization owes a lot to him. And I owe a lot to him being sort of taking over his role.
When I saw Chanticleer at Beloit College, I'm pretty certain that Joseph Jennings was the music director at the time, and a very vibrant part of that memorable performance so many, many years ago. Can you tell us a little bit about how the group functions, and maybe a little bit about your specific role as music director? I mean, what responsibilities are yours as music director of Chanticleer?
Yeah, it's a great question, and Chanticleer is pretty unique. It's deliberately not a conductor. My role is deliberately not called a conductor, because Chanticleer is an unconducted ensemble. So if you go see the group in Kenosha, chances are you won't see me at all. I'll be sitting in the audience taking notes, because I am there sort of as I like to say music facilitator is the word that I use. Because everybody in Chanticleer is an amazing musician and an amazing singer. And so a lot of times in rehearsals, my job is to facilitate the conversations about the music and to get everybody on the same page and to direct people in the in a certain path, but everybody brings their own ideas and their own insights to the piece. So my role is really one of collecting everybody's thoughts and making sure everybody's on the same page, and also being a set of outside ears. It is difficult to really hear everything that's going on when you're singing inside the group. And so I serve as the outside perspective on a lot of things, and I'm there to make sure everything's sort of in place.
As I read through the biographies of all 12 members of Chanticleer, I was really struck, first of all, by the kind of range of musical experience that is there, which I want to talk about in a moment, but also more specifically to my current point, the fact that there is so much choral expertise, and that probably most, if not all, of the rank and file members of Chanticleer could probably serve pretty ably as the music director, or certainly have the kind of ample experience that would equip them to be the music director of some kind of group. And I should think, for you as the music director of Chanticleer, that is a marvelous opportunity, and also maybe a little bit intimidating to be guiding a group in which the collective talent and intelligence and expertise is so formidable.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really amazing. And yeah, absolutely. It's a little intimidating, but it definitely, you know, makes my job a little easier, actually, because I can always say, oh, you know, I know that you have experience singing this kind of music. What do you think is the best way to do this? Or how should this chord sound? Or it really is all of a sudden I have 12 other people to call on in the moment and say, actually, I'm not sure about this. What do you think about this? Should this be this way? So in some ways it's amazing to work in the room with all of them at the same time. And you're right, they all have very different backgrounds, which is, I think, crucial to Chanticleer's sound. I like to think that Chanticleer has this really warm and unified and blended sound, as sort of demonstrated by the beeble you played earlier. But that's born from these very disparate backgrounds. Some people in the group, sang in cathedral choirs growing up. Some people in the group sang in New York as a Broadway singer. Some people in the group sang as jazz musicians. Some people sang on cruise ships before they came to Chanticleer. It's this really wide array of abilities. And this sort of the melding of all those 12 different sounds, very unique sounds, very, very special singers, somehow all come together to make one incredibly unified whole. And I think that's what's maybe most special about Chanticleer.
Right. And I think you're touching on something that's truly extraordinary, that that one way to try to achieve that would be to try to take 12 singers who all grew up in cathedral choirs and are part of that tradition. But instead you have a group where one of your current members fell in love with Patsy Cline as a young boy and actually performed Patsy Cline songs for much of his childhood. Someone else is a vocal jazz specialist who sang with the Rockettes. And someone else, one of your other countertenors, has also dabbled in freestyle rap. And another countertenor has sung Barbershop. And on it goes. Yeah. I mean, I think it's maybe nothing less than a miracle that you gather together people that bring such a wide array of gifts and experiences to the table, and it all melds as one. I mean, it seems like an unlikely possibility, and yet here it is. And it sounds like that's been a part of the Chanticleer legacy for quite some time.
Yeah, I think it has, and I think it's pretty special. And you know, there's a certain joy of music that I think is the commonality between all of those people. There's a certain excitement and thrill that comes from singing with other people, that ringing a chord in tune with the people around you, committing to a performance together with everyone around you, to selling a piece of music, to really investing in the emotional journey of a piece of music. I think these are the things that are common to everybody in the ensemble. And it's just these different sort of lenses that everybody brings to the different styles of repertoire. And you say, okay, we're going to look at this piece through Adam's lens today. And we're all going to bring this unified idea of what it means to sing together and perform together and connect. We're going to bring that, all those similarities, but also bring our differences in interpretation and our different sounds and our different voices and our different experiences.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Tim Keeler, music director of the renowned group Chanticleer, coming to the campus of Carthage College this Friday night for a concert in Siebert Chapel. I want to play a little bit more music, and because the genesis of the group Chanticleer was around early music, I thought it would be nice to play something that's at least relatively early in terms of repertoire, and something that I believe is likely to be sung Friday night. And this is a setting of the familiar text Regina Caeli. And before we listen to just a little bit of this, do you want to say a word about this piece and maybe a little bit about the special pleasures that are involved in learning and performing early music?
Yeah, I believe you're referring to the Regina Caeli's setting by Alexander Agricola.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Yes. This is some piece of Renaissance music, actually early Renaissance music. It's not, there's so many different realms of early music and Renaissance music. And sometimes it's easy for it all to get lumped into somebody like Palestrina. Those really long, flowy lines and intricately well-crafted counterpoint with nothing sticking out of place. One of the things I treasure most about Chanticleer is the ability to sing early music in a pretty thrilling style. And I like to think that this is one of those pieces that affords us this opportunity. It was written well before Palestrina. And it has this really amazing, florid, intricate lines in between throughout the piece. And it's something about grabbing onto that excitement that really brings Renaissance music into the present day. I think it can be easy to put early music off to the side and say, oh, it looks beautiful over there. It sounds beautiful, but I don't have anything that I can relate to in that. And one of the things I think Chanticleer does best is bring the early music into the present day and say, look, this is really exciting. This music is really cool. Listen to this. This is one of those pieces that always gets me excited every time.
Mm. Here it is, a bit of the Regina Caeli of Agricola. That's just a bit of this beautiful piece called Regina Caeli. Tim Keeler, one of the things that strikes me about the program that you're going to be singing Friday night, and I know this to be true of other Chanticleer programs, is that although my sense is that as the program begins, we often are hearing a lot of early music, that Chanticleer tends to reject the kind of tried and true traditional approach of you sing your early music first and then you get a little more romantic and then you get a little more contemporary, and there's kind of this smooth sailing through kind of the arc of time. And Chanticleer likes to mix things up, and looking at Friday night's concert, you will be mixing things up considerably. Can you just talk for a moment about that and about the kind of things that you and whoever else is involved in those kind of decisions, the kind of things you think about in constructing your programs?
Absolutely. I think it for me, it really goes back to a lot about what I was saying earlier about these different different strengths that everybody in the group has, but there's always a through line, a similarity that everyone has as well, and I feel that way about music, that, you know, we were the same people 400 years ago as we are today. You know, emotions were the same. People still fell in love. People were still scared. There's so many similarities. And, you know, most of the time, it's actually the same 12 notes, too, which is pretty remarkable that all of this contemporary music and early music is all constructed with the same alphabet. It's remarkable. And so to think that, you know, you have to separate them, while that it can be potentially easier on the ears sometimes if it's not done well, there's a lot of connections and a lot of similarities between genres and between time periods. And I think it's a group like Chanticleer, it's almost our duty to highlight those similarities and those connections, because we have the ability to perform all these different styles of repertoire. So yeah, at the very beginning of the concert, we start with a new commission by a Chicago-based composer called Ayanna Wood that she wrote for us, sort of in the middle of the pandemic, actually. And it's based on an LA Times editorial that was written in March 2020, called "On Performing Arts Venues to Close Now." She sort of reformulated that article, made an erasure poem out of it, and highlighted different words in it to create her own text that is, it's personal, but it's also fairly optimistic. And at the end, she encourages everybody to come back to life is the final line. And so that's how we start off the program, with this new piece of work written sort of through and of and for the current world we're in, but also looking forward to the future. And then we go immediately into a piece of Renaissance music, that one of my favorite pieces of music of all time. It's an excerpt from Monteverdi's Vespers of 1610, the movement Lauda Jerusalem, which is all full of joy and praising and life. And to see how we can go from, you know, the sort of ambiguity of the current world of the past year, and then just brought back to life with music from 400 years ago. I think it's beautiful, and I it's some that kind of contrast I think is really important.
One of the interesting questions that I have posed to quite a number of different musicians is what this time of the pandemic has been like. And I'm certainly anxious to hear about that from you, and hear about how Chanticleer weathered this really difficult period. But ahead of that, talk about the way the typical year is set up for Chanticleer, quite apart from when our whole world is turned upside down by something like the pandemic. I mean, do you, for instance, have seasons? Do you have a period where you rehearse, you perfect a program, and then you go out on tour and sing that program, and then you come back and rehearse a new program and then go out and perform it? Or is kind of the performance life of the group a bit more complicated than that?
Yeah, it's always complicated, and every year is different. But in general, Chanticleer performs about 100 concerts every year. And those, you know, I think maybe about 60% of those are on the road and touring. And so every year we have a couple programs that we we tour around the country, including the one that we're going to sing in Wisconsin, which is called Awakenings, which we actually, we've performed it many times by now, actually, because we usually rehearse our touring programs the summer before we go out and sing them. So our season usually goes from, August through the following July. So they're kind of like a school year. And we rehearse our programs at the beginning of that year and then take them on tour for the rest of it. But within that framework, we also have the opportunity to work on sort of special projects throughout the year. So a lot of these happen in the Bay Area near San Francisco. And there's an opportunity for us to dive into a little more esoteric repertoire, stuff that, maybe doesn't have quite as broad an appeal. So, for instance, coming up in May, we've got a program of all early Renaissance music, all music actually by Alexander Agricola and his contemporaries. So that's something that is a very unique sort of program that, occasionally we'll take on tour, but it's mostly a sort of special program for the Bay Area. And then amidst all that, of course, we have our Christmas program, which is totally its own thing. And I think in the month of December, I think between Thanksgiving and Christmas Day, I think we always perform somewhere between 24 and 25 concerts. So it's always jam-packed with a Christmas program that is, every musician owes a lot to Christmas to get us through the rest of the year. It's exciting and thrilling, and it's obviously one of my favorite seasons to be a singer and to be a music director, because we get to sing a completely separate set of repertoire of music that is familiar and exciting and a lot of fun.
So let's turn from the fun to the not so fun, to the terribly painful and difficult experience that I'm sure was Chanticleer's experience during this pandemic. And I wonder, for the group, how did you weather that really difficult period when I assume your performance schedule all but ground to a halt?
Yeah, it's difficult, and everybody has a story from the pandemic, and I don't think it was easy on anyone. It was certainly tough for us for many reasons. Of course, all our concerts were canceled for, over a year. There's singing was not, still isn't really the most accepted activity. Talk about spreading aerosols, and singing is frankly a very good way to do that. So it was scary for all of us at the beginning. This thing that we loved so much all of a sudden became the very thing that you weren't supposed to do. And it's still, there's still a lot of hesitancy, even to this day, with different waves of the virus. We're not out of the woods yet, but we're trying to make it work. And the beginning of the pandemic, before vaccines and everything, we were trying to find ways to continue to perform and without performing for live audiences. And so we did manage to film 3 complete concerts in 2020 and 2021 as a way of still making our art and still getting people to experience Chanticleer. It was a new thing for us. We're so used to being on the road and performing for live audiences, and it was a bit of a shock to all of a sudden have a whole concert that you're just singing to a couple cameras, and there's no feedback, and there's no audience reaction, and there's no applause, and so you just sort of, okay, well, I guess that's it. but it was, I'm really glad that we were able to make that happen and still be able to make some art in the midst of it all.
Mm-hmm. You come to Carthage for a concert this Friday night, and it makes me kind of wonder, what is it like to journey from place to place, from space to space, and to find yourself in a place in which none of you, I assume, have ever sung before, and in terms of kind of making sense of it acoustically and exactly where you'll stand and exactly how you will hear each other and experience each other's singing. How difficult a challenge is that for a group that tours as extensively as Chanticleer does?
That's a great question. It is. It's not always easy. Fortunately, we're pretty familiar with the repertoire at this point. And you know, as I already said, everybody in Chanticleer is a fantastic musician, so we can make it work sort of no matter the situation. But it always takes a little bit of time to get used to. It's really different performing a concert in a marble cathedral that it would be singing on some performing arts center in a town somewhere. This is vastly different acoustics, and it really changes not only how we hear a piece, but it can change how we sing a piece, whether we take things a little faster, a little slower, or how we stand. As you mentioned earlier, it's really important that we can hear each other. Sometimes we can't hear each other, and we just have to trust that everybody's going on the same page. But it's always a bit of an experiment when we first arrive to a place. But that's why we have a little bit of time before the concert to make sure that we can get ourselves set up appropriately.
Great. Well, I've heard some wonderful groups in Siebert Chapel, including Anonymous Four and the King Singers, and I believe Chanticleer some years ago, and I'm excited to hear this latest incarnation of Chanticleer in Friday night's concert. Your concert is going to include a contemporary piece by a composer named Ulysses Kay, and a piece called Music. I thought it would be interesting to hear just a little bit about this from this piece. But first I wanted to ask you, I think it's one thing when you all come to the table with a shared love of early music. It seems to me that when it comes to contemporary music, the possibilities are so endless, and the possibility or potential is also there where somebody comes to you with a brand new piece, bracingly modern, that some of you might really love, and maybe some of you might not love quite so much. Is that ever a challenge in terms of choosing modern works to which all of you are going to be able to relate and sing enthusiastically?
Of course. And, not just modern works. There's many different genres of music that not everybody's going to really resonate with every piece of music. Just as an audience member, you're not going to necessarily resonate with every piece of music that you hear. And it's the same for us. I certainly have my favorite pieces on the program. but it is part of what makes our job so special is that we have the opportunity to really lean into a piece of music and say, okay, maybe I don't really like this text, or maybe I don't really like this melody very much, but we perform it, over the course of a year, maybe we'll perform it 30 times. So I'm going to find, each time I'm going to try to find something that I can latch onto in this piece of music, and so find something that I can love about it. It's also, sort of our job as performers to inhabit these spaces and love these spaces and display and sing these works of music for the people who are really going to resonate with it. And the people who will really mean something to. And so we have to present it with those people in mind, because even if it's not our favorite piece of music, it might be somebody in the audience's favorite piece.
So tell us just a quick word about this piece by Ulysses Kay that is part of Friday night's concert, this piece called Music.
Yeah, this is, Ulysses Kay is a 20th century Black American composer, and this is a piece that he wrote for the DePauw Infantry Chorus, I think back in 1953. It's a piece that I did not know anything about until I started as music director of Chanticleer and spent, a couple months sort of diving through the the catalog here, the rows of filing cabinets of music, and stumbled across this piece, which is it's beautiful. It's very harmonically intricate, and it's written for a tenor bass ensemble. So, as I said, written for the infantry, DePauw Infantry Corps. So it's sort of a very rich sound. And it's based on a text by Ralph Waldo Emerson, a text of the same name called Music. And throughout the text, Emerson describes, he says that even in, it's not just in the beautiful things where music exists. It's not, there's beauty in the rainbow, yes, but there's also beauty elsewhere. And the final line of the poem is, even in the mud and scum of things, there always something sings. So it's a little bit about finding beauty and about finding joy where you least expect it. But it's not always, I like to think it's not quite as you know, trite as just look on the bright side. It's a little bit about actually exploring what makes those things so miraculous. What actually is happening in a downpour of rain that is not so pleasant? What are the miracles that are taking place in that moment of darkness? Mm-hmm. And it's it meant a lot to us during the pandemic. It was a piece that we turned to a couple times in the pandemic, and it's a piece that it hasn't been performed a lot in America, and we are excited to sort of expose it to a broader audience throughout this tour, and because it's pretty special.
Let's hear just a little bit of Ulysses K's music.
Let me go.
Very striking piece of music indeed. And again, the words of Ralph Waldo Emerson, they do speak to our time. As a matter of fact, the last piece of music that we'll listen to as we close is a prayer for Ukraine that Chanticleer recently shared via YouTube, and that the Carthage Choir, as a matter of fact, is also learning at this very moment, the same piece, albeit a slightly different arrangement. And so I appreciate the way in which Chanticleer has tried to, over the course of its long history, not only explore and celebrate the timelessness of music itself, but also speaking to certain issues and concerns and sometimes tragedies that are also part of our human experience. When you are looking for your newest members to join Chanticleer, how much do you have to think about the harmony of just being in the room together and working together, not just the blend of actual voices, but the blend of personalities and so on. How do you think about that aspect of the group? Because I should think that kind of chemistry is central to what makes Chanticleer so incredibly successful.
It's crucial. You're absolutely right. And it's a big factor in finding new members for the ensemble because, you know, singing is such a, well, it's a very vulnerable art form. And in order to sing beautifully and effectively and evocatively, you need to feel completely comfortable on stage. And you need to be able to trust everyone that's around you. That's even more so in ensemble singing. You need to be able to trust that they've got your back, that they're going to sing with you and take the same leap at the same time that you are. So it's really important that everybody in the ensemble has respect and trust for each other. You know, that's not to say we don't have our differences every now and then, you know, as we spend so much time together and on the road together. But being able to rely on each other is crucial and a big factor, you're right, I think, of Chanticleer's success.
Well, I know so many people who are just thrilled beyond words that Chanticleer is coming to the campus of Carthage College for a concert this Friday evening in Siebert Chapel. And more information about Friday night's concert is available at carthage.edu. And I do want to finish out our time together by having Chanticleer sing this lovely prayer for Ukraine as we all continue to feel such concern for the people of Ukraine. And it's another example of the sublime beauty of Chanticleer's singing. And at the helm, their music director, Tim Keeler. Tim Keeler, I thank you so much for being part of the morning show today. It was an honor to speak with you, and we wish you and all of the members of Chanticleer only the very, very best as you continue to share your beautiful artistry with the world. Thank you again for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you very much, Greg. It was a pleasure to chat.
And here is that aforementioned prayer for Ukraine as sung by Chanticleer. Chanticleer in Prayer for Ukraine. Ticket information for Friday night's concert is available if you go to carthage.edu. It's exactly 9 o'clock, and tomorrow on the morning show, I will be honored indeed to